Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
The Word is a proud media partner of Latitude Festival 2012. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.latitudefestival.co.uk.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
My key moment of the weekend, I've decided, was the end of Grace Jones at the Jubilee concert, going into Ed Sheeran at the Jubilee concert. Did you see this, Jude?
I didn't, no.
It was astonishing.
Okay, was right, Avon, for the benefit of Jude who missed it, just describe Grace Jones's act, which came at about an hour into the proceedings, didn't
it? Yeah, she came on like a fattish transformer, I guess. She was kind of wearing lots of, like, no, fattish, not fat transformer. I want to point out for any lawyers listening, I was not questioning her weight. She looks fantastic for 64.
64? Yeah. 65?
Yeah.
And
for the entire performance of Slave to Love, I believe.
Slave to the Rhythm.
She performed with a hula hoop. Like, she had the hula hoop going for the entire song.
Now, this is about 5 minutes long, this tune.
Yeah.
And she was singing it live, wasn't she?
Well, I'd seen her do that at Lovebox a couple of years earlier. Which that was kind of part of her act, where she does
with
that.
With the hula hoop?
Yeah. But she also has pretty much a costume change and certainly a hat change for every song as well.
But Grace Jones...
She has her own Milner.
Jones' Diamond Jubilee is just a coming together of...
It was extraordinary.
Mind.
I thought it was an inspired moment, actually, which she couldn't accuse most of it as being. But she came on... She appeared to be... What I can only describe as blister packed, didn't she? There was a kind of shine all over her, wasn't there? Unbelievable legs. Sorry? She'd been oiled.
Like that cover of. What album is it that has a cover of her, you know, naked, kind of oiled and kind of just incredible?
Yes, possibly, yeah.
She's an incredible looking woman.
And she kept this thing going. And I was watching this round with the mates. I wasn't planning to. We'd gone round to a mate for cup of tea, and they said, "Oh, it's starting." You watch the beginning. We were there with the family, and they were there with the family. I was still there at 10:45 at night. We were watching on a huge, great telly, high definition, with surround sound, with, you know, a friend of mine who's a television person, and so it was just extraordinary to watch this thing because you were thinking, she can't really be keeping that hula hoop up herself.
There's something very...
There's got to be some kind of force field or something that's keeping it up. But she was doing it, wasn't she?
She's her own centre of gravity.
There's something very British of the fact she was hula hooping as well. It's a bit end of the pier, isn't it?
So she did that, which was, I thought, the most astonishing moment of the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And was then followed by...
Well, Ed Sheeran just kind of... shambles out with his hair uncombed and proceeds to play, what's it called, the A-Team?
Yes, it's called the A-Team.
It's a song about drug addiction and prostitution, and it's just him and an acoustic guitar, and it was the greatest anticlimax.
It was.
But it was untoppable, even Paul McCartney coming out and doing a mass 25-minute sing-along to Hey Jude would have trouble topping that.
It was the complete... The thing that got me about Ed Sheeran was the complete absence of kind of any kind of reaching out. You know what I mean? I know he's an acoustic act, and I know anybody playing an acoustic guitar.
The girls love him as well.
Coming on after Grace Jones is going to be difficult. But Grace Jones is just energy incarnate. You know what I mean? She's completely reaching out to you. And he's coming out, and you're thinking, this is not getting beyond the photographer's pit.
Yeah, I think that he was positioned there very carefully so that the rest of the show would rise again. He was kind of like the sorbet. To kind of clear the audience.
Clear the palate.
So we kind of forget about that. It was almost like the roadies coming up and rearranging the TV, and then somebody else, a bit more up-tempo, will come on so that they don't look quite as awful against Grace Jones. Maybe, who was it that followed? Was it Tom Jones that followed her? Maybe he insisted that somebody
Yes.
Average or mediocre or a bit down key would go on to deflate the audience, then he could come on and look amazing.
I reckon.
Everybody's going, thank God, that's over. Wow.
I reckon it's something for the kids. Youngsters love
Ed Sheeran. Of course, he's huge.
Lots of people love Ed Sheeran. I don't get it myself. The one bit I did see, because I tried to kind of avoid the whole circus all weekend, because I just thought it's just going to drive me nuts, was Madness playing on top of Buckingham Palace. Which Alexis Petridis wrote about in a review, and it was a great review. I thought, and he said, this is a brilliant moment. I watched it, and I must admit, the bit where they're playing Our House and the lights are flashing on the windows of Buckingham Palace, as if, you know, the Queen Mum has just popped up.
They projected massive, great building scapes onto Buckingham Palace.
That was really
it
good.
Was astonishing. Which had a bus going past, and where they were animated and in all kinds of ways. So it sort of looked at first like the cover of Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti.
Yes.
It kind of come to life on this. And it is, because I thought at first, playing in front of Buckingham Palace, that's not a very promising background at all. But it's actually a brilliant
And Our House, I would recommend anybody watch that on YouTube. Oh, yeah. It is fantastic. They and they're
really,
on the top
really
of Buckingham
good.
Palace playing it. And it did bring a tear to my eye, because even this, Republican in the corner would have moved to near tears.
Regardless of that,
yes.
I mean, the thing that struck me about that, I don't watch television much at all. And I tend to avoid big things like that, because they drive me a bit mad. But I was still there at 11 o'clock. Because I thought, I've got to see if this falls apart at any point. You know, because it's getting very tense once the Queen has arrived. You know, you're thinking, 85-year-old woman, you know what I mean, having this taking place on our front lawn or whatever, late at night, it's cold enough anywhere in London, let alone, it must be perishing in there. I thought, something is going to go wrong with this. But as far as I could see, and as far as my TV professional mate could see, nothing went wrong at all.
Was the Queen there when Grace Jones was on? That's all I was
saying. No, she showed up just after or before Tom Jones.
Big Tom fan.
Yeah.
But they softened it slightly when she came on, when she came in.
Yeah.
Because they had Robbie Williams doing his kind of swing
number, of course, and
so forth. You know, they're very cleverly programming it. But, you know, we've all seen these big spectaculars, and it's nothing to do with music, is it? It's a spectacular. And I thought it was absolutely astonishing, just as a spectacular.
Oh, absolutely. They'd thrown a lot of money at it, and it looked good on telly, which those things, it's hard to make those things look good on telly, and it actually did, because they had nice aerial shots, and they'd obviously spent a lot of money on the lighting, so the stage lit up, and they used, when it got a bit darker, they used the palace as well as part of the backdrop of it. And then those kind of big crane shots of the mall looking down, and when it all started to light up, it did look incredibly good. It was like kind of headliner at Glastonbury kind of thing. It was like they'd thrown every trick in the book.
And Kylie, which was pretty astonishing, wasn't it? You know, she did that medley and tons of dancers, as you'd imagine. But I couldn't get over how they kind of slotted McCartney's most spectacular bit of his act, which is Live and Let Die, into this big act, you know what I mean? You're going to come on, you're going to do four numbers, and you want your pyros in the middle of this, do you? Yeah, fine, we can do that. And it was absolutely amazing. Now, there's great controversy in the office when I arrived yesterday about whether he should have done obla-dee, obla-da, Fraser. I know you're in the anti-camp, aren't you? What did you think he should have done?
Oh, I think, Hey Jude, Let It Be,
it
needs to be a great big singer, though.
What did he do?
What did he do?
He did Magical Mystery.
You can probably remember.
Magical Mystery Tour.
All My Loving.
Live and Let Die. And Obla-dee, Obla-da.
He did a Let It Be,
and then Obla-dee, Obla-da. At which point, everybody in the cast came on and kind of jigged about and sung along, and then and then they stopped. Ignore the noise in the background here.
If you surveyed the nation after their least favourite Beatles song, it would come pretty near the top.
You see, but I don't think it's about that anymore. It's interesting, because I was sitting there with my 29-year-old daughter, who was going, Paul McCartney's going to come on, and I was saying, well, what do we think he's going to do then? She said, I just hope he doesn't do Hey Jude. Because, all her life, Paul McCartney has been popping up at massive stadium do's and always doing, Hey Jude. And she said, I don't want to hear it anymore. And as far as my 29-year-old daughter is concerned, Obla-dee, Obla-da is not that naff thing that blights the Beatles catalogue. It's a tune she's probably never heard before.
But it's a song that doesn't mean anything outside of Beatles fans. It has no resonance or no significance. it doesn't have a wider life because
I think it does, actually.
Hey Jude has a huge wider life that kind of exists in its own orbit, but Obladay Obladay is always the song that you skipped over on the Blue Album.
However,
always.
If you're in your early 30s, you will remember Obladay Obladay from the cover by Black Lace on their Party Party album from the early 80s.
I think this is only you, Jude.
Yeah, no. But Black Lace were a big band, weren't they? You know, kind of for kids of a certain age.
Big hit.
They sold some records.
Well, in school discos in the 80s, Obladay Obladay, their version, and, you know, Superman and all those were everywhere. I think it's just one of these... It feels a bit musical, doesn't it? I'm not keen on the song myself, but it's that same thing. It's got, like, a British musical, you know, together.
I think it's objectively a terrible song.
It is a terrible song.
Well, except that we all know it, and 17 million people kind of tapped their foot.
I like the fact that...
It can't be that bad.
But then more people know... Brian Adams' song, then they would know Obladay Obladay.
I think 17 million people probably sit and think, OK, well, so what are you going to finish with?
Yeah.
It was such a
damp squib ending.
Somebody on Twitter said that he should have finished with Elizabeth, My Dear, which I know John Lennon sings. You know, Her Majesty's a pretty nice.
Well, yeah, that, I was thinking, is he going to dare sing
that? At the Golden Jubilee.
Oh, did he?
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that.
I watched that one. That was a long time ago.
But, so, you see, I think there's something in McCartney that wouldn't dare do that because she was going to come on the stage. And did you watch him right at the end when, Sir, Her Majesty's coming on, whatever, and Charles is doing his speech. And behind them, they have, crowded into the shot, Paul McCartney, Elton John, and Woody from Madness, right? And I can't remember who else. And
Peter Kay.
I can't think of Woody from Madness. That's just hilarious. Yeah. The shot. And Paul McCartney was very carefully doing everything in his power not to distract any attention at all, whereas Elton was frankly looking a bit bored because Elton likes being the centre of attention. He doesn't like standing behind anybody at all. Now, the other big question we debated when I was around at a friend's house is, you know, one of these days Paul McCartney is going to shuffle off this mortal coil.
Who's he live forever, Macca?
Who's going to headline these kind of shows in the future?
Well,
at the moment they don't have a problem, do they, with hierarchy?
I think basically that whole Jubilee show was Gary Barlow jostling for the job.
Really?
Gary Barlow positioning himself as absolutely central to the establishment. It's him kowtowing to... obviously, supporting David Cameron and sucking up to the Queen and all of that. And he wants to be absorbed completely into the establishment. There was that whole kind of process of loads of artists kind of going, oh, we don't want to be part of the establishment. And then they kind of give in. At least they went through the pantomime of not wanting to be part of the establishment. Gary Barlow wanted to be part of the establishment
but
from the off.
Lessons.
So that was his work experience.
But Gary Barlow, okay, and that's a fair point. But Gary Barlow is never going to be writing down a kind of running order. When McCartney has given up doing this, he's never going to be writing down a running order that has Elton John, then him.
He hasn't got the charisma. He's just, the charismatic members of Take That. Actually, Jason Orange is more charismatic than Gary Barlow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like a lot of Take That's, you know, back catalogue, I must admit. I went to see Take That a couple of years ago in Manchester, and it was one of the best gigs I've ever seen in my life. You know, it was fantastic. They do proper stage shows. They're very entertaining. But the lowest moment of it was Gary Barlow's kind of little speeches between tongues, like, oh, hello, everyone. And it's just like, oh, you know, he's safe, he's cuddly. And you can't obviously be safe. I know that, you know, Macca is a bit safe and a bit cuddly in some ways, but, you know, there's so much warmth about him. There's not really warmth to Gary Barlow. He's a bit tepid.
You see, does anybody look at Gary Barlow? I know I can never do this, but, you know, do you look at Gary Barlow? And you've kind of grown up with Gary Barlow, yeah?
I was just at that age where I was just, you know, kind of trying to sell all my Madonna tapes because they were not cool enough to when I was 14. But, you know, I did sneakily.
But do you
like
look
them.
At him and think, wow, he has the resonance of history at his back? Because that's half the battle with Paul McCartney, isn't it? He comes on stage and people go, that's bloody Paul McCartney.
Yeah, yeah. No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He doesn't. No. And he kind of never will he? Or will it? I don't know. Will that happen? Because it's kind of interesting. We've gone through an interesting time the last few years. In that the teen acts have shown themselves capable of reinventing themselves very successfully as middle-aged entertainers, haven't they? And we had another case of this with Kylie.
Yeah.
Who's how old?
42, 43.
And going stronger than ever.
43, I think.
Because probably sell more tickets than she's never done.
I love Kylie.
You know, so will those people ever be promoted to that kind of senior slot.
Yeah, you've got to be like it's National Treasure slot. You kind of want to give them a cuddle, don't you? Really, Kylie, you want to give her a cuddle. You know, other people might want to give him more than that, but and you want to give Paul McCartney a cuddle. You don't want to give Gary Barlow a cuddle because he's a bit.
It's a cuddle test, isn't
it's
it?
It's a cuddle test.
That's
yeah.
Well, I suppose maybe Robbie Williams, depending on what mood he's in, he kind of goes fold in and out of favour for that. But Gary Barlow, when they came back to four piece. And everybody thought it was going to be this nostalgia trip and just like the way Boyzone came back and they'll play like one show at Wembley. And then they just took on this whole other life. Then he started writing much better songs. And then the band just became enormous. And then they got Robbie Williams back. And it was a nice kind of resolution to all the bitterness that had kind of... Because he was indescribably naff mid-late 90s when Robbie Williams was taken off. And everybody had kind of said... That Gary Barlow was the talent. He was going to be the one that was hugely successful, and he wasn't.
Bombed, yeah.
And he quickly became a byword for kind of a naff kind of jobbing singer songwriter who wasn't Gary Barlow and who wasn't Guy Chambers. And he was in the wilderness for a long, long time, kind of writing B sides for various people and all of that. So, kind of the fact that he came back and the band became bigger than ever. Well, it's phenomenal. To do a comeback and where your comeback exceeds your previous fame is kind of unprecedented.
But don't you think everybody's comeback nowadays is bigger than their first incarnation because they've got the original fans and they've got some new ones. So the audience has grown, hasn't it? Paul McCartney now is playing bigger venues than he ever would have done at the Beatles.
The issue with Paul McCartney is that nobody wants to hear the new stuff, whereas half of Take That set now, people want to hear the new stuff off the last couple of albums.
And they do want to hear it.
Like World and Patience and stuff like that are as big as their kind of early 90s hits.
Oh, really?
Oh, very much so. I think what they've done is take, it's almost a bit of Coldplay's kind of, you know,
Man who has emotions.
Yeah, man who has emotions and melodies that kind of, you know, stick in your head. And they've taken that and they've bolted that to, you know, we're a bit older. You know, a lot of them have got better looking, I think. You know, they're kind of
grown into their looks.
Yeah, I was always a Jason Orange fan because I'm a bit weird. But I think he's gotten very handsome indeed.
Oh, really? See, now I'm not suggesting, perish the thought, that there might be any plastic surgery jiggery pokery going on with any of these performers.
But take that, no.
I'm not going to name any names at all, but it is a fact, isn't it, nowadays, that people can keep... The kind of depredations of Anno Domini at bay for far longer, can't they?
This is true.
And I certainly wouldn't suggest Bruce Springsteen's had anything of any of that.
I don't care. He can do anything. I don't care.
But they don't. People don't look old in the way that they used to look old, do they? I mean, Paul McCartney turns up the other night, and I'm thinking, I don't know how you've done it, Paul, but you look 5 years younger than you did.
I think people look younger anyway. Here's a completely different example. Have you watched, did you watch recently, 56 Up on ITV?
Yes. I did.
The documentary that started
the six-year-olds.
Seven-year-olds in 1964, every 7 years. Fantastic TV, still ITV player, brilliant. What I found from that, watching it, is people now look younger than they did, you know, 21 years ago is really bizarre. I think because, you know, maybe quality of life has got better, you know, maybe it's going the other way now.
Kind of the emergence of middle youth, where you're...
Middle youth.
You don't have to... When you reach a certain age in the 60s, that's when you wore the suit. And so as a man, you wore a suit and the suit became a symbol of you in going into middle age. And now people in their 50s are running around in 300-pound... trainers and 400-pound imported jeans from Japan. And that's fine, so... The fashion has changed as well, and people are allowed to pretend. They're indulged in their pretends to chase that youth. They don't have to. Once you have kids, you don't have to stop going out. And certainly, if you look at like live music, the big boom in live music was getting out people out of the house who would never go to live gigs. That they would assume that they're too old to go to live gigs.
If you're a woman in your early 60s these days, and count my mum in this, you've probably got blonde hair. You know, my mum's brunette. Yeah. But, you know, kind of people dye the hair. They don't dye the hair purple or pink. They dye it blonde. Yes. And they, you know, dress a bit
doesn't
more.
Doesn't adopt a head square.
Yeah, no head squares, like no beige mac, sensible shoes, still got the heels on.
You have been listening to the free feed of the Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.